That's very much Darren. Okay, rehabilitation of Kautsky there, if he needed one. Any questions, please? Simon, okay? Inevitably, right.
Something that comes up in there, I'm looking first of all from that, I think it's the Geddes program, 1880. Is yours Geddes?
That's the French workers program, yeah.
And through to our own program.
Yeah.
And when you look at what Marx is saying, from like the Civil War in France, whatever it is, you see all the way through that they're saying that the working class should be using all means, including the franchise, in order to achieve their ends. That tends to get translated, mistranslated, into the working class should use the franchise. It is never that. Anyone, as I've said before through this weekend, anyone who thinks that that is going to happen is going to end up shot in a football stadium, and I'm probably going to be right alongside them against my own will. So we do need to be careful about what we're saying, because otherwise we will look like a fool. A second thing is noticeable about looking at the actual Paris siege. It's noticeable that a siege economy is a collectivized economy. So it could be either the capitalist state in embryo or the socialist state in embryo, because it is just basically maintaining an economy rather than the economy. So that's an example of how you can a transition from one state to another, while basically you're playing it straight. Yeah? You're saying this is what a capitalist state would do in a crisis situation, and then following along those lines, without having to consciously diverge and say, I'm a socialist and I'm going to do this, following those lines of capitalist logic, you come to the point where you say, now I'm in a state of flux where I can apply my socialist ideas to a new state, but basically unpack what I now have, a bit like Mr. Ben going into the changing room and then come back out of the changing room as a different person than the adventure he's had. Yeah? So you, rather than having to say from the outset that we are a socialist party that's going to run a socialist program with a socialist movement or whatever, and then everything's going to go by the numbers, you're actually going to go into a socialist situation more or less straight into a crisis, and then you're going to come out the revolving door, hopefully with your plan, if you were sufficiently organized to start with.
So the first, I'll talk about Karp scheme. Yes, no,
your speaker's off.
My speaker's off.
All right,
my microphone or my
I'll turn the mic off.
So Kautsky certainly, I mean, he was writing, you know, during the German Revolution, when there was a situation of, there was at one stage, you know, a kind of dual power between the councils and the parliament. And Kautsky definitely said, no, not only a parliament, he was like, yes, councils, but there needs to be some other kind of political, because councils are kind of, you know, it's just workplaces. And he was saying councils should be incorporated with parliaments and things like this. So I think, you know, this is the all the means, you know, if councils are there, they become the means that you can use, don't they? So I think the Socialist Party, not explicitly, but we kind of say this as well, if there was a situation where things like councils did appear, obviously socialists would use them and use them as a mechanism to advance socialism as they could. And then on the second, so yeah, about what was the Paris Commune, well, it certainly wasn't a socialist economy, and yes, it was, so therefore it was a capitalist economy, right? But it does show, you know, by kind of the constitutional changes they made, you know, political, you know, mandated recallable delegates. The delegates they're not treated like the hoi polloi, they're just normal working people. This does show you a way that, yes, it's not socialism, but once that's kind of enacted, yeah, like you said, this is how you can then enact a more full socialist program if there is the majority behind it. Yeah. So yeah.
Was the Paris Commune the group for people who didn't take the money? Didn't rob the banks? That's what I mean.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So that was one part of it where there wasn't. I mean, because obviously they control Paris.
Yeah.
With the arms.
Well done.
They physically could have gone to the bank with their guns and said, "Give us all the gold," but I don't think they did that. Yeah, that's part of the story of it. Yeah.
Ed.
Thanks. Really thought-provoking talk. I'm going to make a couple of points, hopefully briefly, I'm sorry, I've got a couple of things to say. One of them was just the bit that you read out from the Republican Social Democracy about socialist ministers or ministries that aren't strong enough to get rid of the bureaucracy and the officer corps and so on. And on that, I think the Leninists might have a point saying that Kautsky moved to the right, because in the Weimar Republic, that's exactly what the German Social Democratic Party did participate in coalition governments when the bureaucracy and the officer corps, basically the unreformed imperial German general staff, was still there. And Kautsky was happy to participate in broad Republican coalition governments in Weimar until the reactionary forces were strong enough to get rid of them. So I think probably there is an argument that Kautsky on that point moved to the right. Second thing is, I think maybe it was in the quotes that you skipped over, but you said you were going to say something about cook shops and not describing what future society is like.
Yeah.
And actually, I think we've got to be a bit more explicit, even knowing that it's speculative, that we can't give the full recipe for the cook shops. But I think after the experience of the 20th century of institutions that were called Union of Soviet Socialist Republics and all the rest of it, if you just say to people, "I don't know what it's going to be like, you know, don't worry, you'll find out when we get there," then people might say, "Well, hang on, I think I've got a pretty shrewd idea what it's going to look like, because I can see what people using similar slogans have ended up creating before, and I'm not sure I actually want to eat from that cookshop." So I think now we probably do need to be a bit more explicit about what we think the future society is going to look like. And third point, and this is my last point, is that in the 19th century, and whether it's Marx or whether it's the younger Kautsky, I don't think any large European state had a government based on universal suffrage with the government accountable to the legislature or to the elect, whereas now they all do. So it probably wasn't as clear. It wasn't as clear in the 19th century. Probably a lot of supporters of capitalism in the 19th century would have thought universal suffrage is really dangerous, because once we give the vote to all those workers who don't own property, then they'll just vote socialization. Whereas now, we can see that in itself doesn't automatically happen, that you perfectly can keep a very class-privileged society running with political democracy. So the idea, so that close connection between democratic and republican institutions and socialization probably looks weaker now than it would have done in the 1870s.
Okay, yeah. So, okay, so three things you said there. So the first one, so was there a kind of rightward shift in Kautsky? I'm going to be kind of agnostic about this. I think my aim here was more just to try to rehabilitate Kautsky a bit, just to get people to look at him again. Especially maybe looking at the more recent scholarship as well. But I think he's definitely, you know, he gets written off as some kind of crude determinist or something like this. But when you look at his, especially a lot of his works that have recently translated into English, he becomes a lot more of a sophisticated thinker than you might think. So, yeah, I'm going to say I'm agnostic about this kind of thing. It's just worth re-examining. And the second one was about cookshops, wasn't it? Yeah. Let's say this is me talking rather than Kautsky. So maybe we can't write cookbooks about the future, but we can, you know, we can't write recipes. We can certainly write about the principles, you know, find out about the principles of cooking there, or, you know, what social forms of organization there are. Maybe we can't positively talk about the future, but we can kind of negatively, we can say what socialism, can't say what socialism is, but we can say what it won't have. So obviously, you know, if there's some kind of minority control or dictatorship, then this isn't socialism because it's not social control. So kind of like the, I don't know, you know, Adorno and people talk about negative criticism. So maybe, I'd like to, more, you know, more, when you say something is not this, I mean, I think that's still a strong position. So maybe this is better than giving, like, you know, full blueprints like Venus Project or Zeitgeist or something, which I think is, this is the kind of thing that Kautsky was criticising, you know, fully worked out plans. But the trouble with fully worked out plans is they're all coming from our position as we are now, but people in the future are going to be different with different values. And the third point was, I've forgotten that.
Link between democracy and...
Ah, yes. Okay, yes, I think you're right here, actually. The thing, yeah, so when Kautsky, certainly the early Kautsky and Marx were writing, liberal democracies, as we call them now, were very rare. And yes, I mean, perhaps it can be argued that both Marx and Kautsky were over-optimistic about the possibilities of democracy and the ease of which the working class could use this to gain its emancipation. You know, because obviously capitalist democracies, yes, everyone has a formal vote, but there's not like an equal influence on the generation of ideas and this kind of thing. So I think, yeah, you're right there that, I mean, this is one thing we can, I think, and it's worth doing, Marx, Kautsky, maybe, you know, it's understandable at the time they were writing, you know, but then maybe they were over-optimistic about the ease or the rapidity, if that's a word, that achieving democracy would lead to socialism.
Yeah. Okay, thank you, Bill.
Just by way of a light confession, I was given the recent translation of Kautsky on democracy to review for the Standard, and I've lost it. I've no idea where the hell it's gone. But it was interesting, because from memory, I mean, he has some good critiques of director wise. And of course, he brings up the point that the people at the time were making print table myths now that Athenian democracy was in fact highly restricted to a very small section of that society that wasn't this great free democracy that sometimes it gets portrayed as. But I think he also, this is from rough memory from Michael Lindley's skins, kind of comes to the point that, that parliamentary democracy is the best it gets, which I suppose. But following on from that instance, that, you know, he did get to see his revolution carried out because he went to Georgia, where they followed the Social Democrat program fairly closely. Now, whether that was them trying to appeal to the Europeans and make it out that we're doing what you want, that was fairly swiftly crushed by the Bolsheviks shortly after. So, but even in his writings there, he provides a very useful account for why nationalising banks is a bit pointless. Does seem to be arguing in the case of that there will be money in the Social Republic, that we won't have the abolition of the need for money. So you kind of get to this point at that stage in his career where he seems to be arguing for parliamentary republics with some sort of market. And just finally, I'd like to lightly dispute on this idea of politics you raised at the end. Because for me, you know, deciding where to put a bus stop, no matter how much people may disagree about where to put the bus stop, that's not political. Politics is deciding who gets to decide. And once you've got a stable democracy, it's no longer a political question of where you put the bus stop. It is just a technical question.
Okay, so I'll just comment on the last part then, because they're the parties here. Okay, so yeah, where you put the bus stop, maybe that's a technical question, but in societies, there's still going to be people are going to disagree about things they hold very strong. You know, there's going to be moral and ethical conflicts, and I think this is what, I mean, politics is one of these words. There's various ways of saying what it means, but I think the way I see politics is something that exists in all human societies of significant scale, and it's about basically how you live together and make decisions when you disagree about things that are, you know, so we had the example yesterday about, are we going to demolish this school in the future because it's a important monument to socialist revolution. So it's this kind of, you know, what happens when political decisions aren't, yeah, like we said yesterday, aren't just about what you do, they're about what you don't do. If you decide that people aren't, that you don't want people to not do something, then there has to be a way to enforce this. And this is kind of what, the way I view politics is, it's there, the kind of real politics way of understanding it.
What else?
Okay. Did Kaski envisage a socialist republic in just one country or whatever? Or do you see a worldwide?
No, a world. Yeah.
I must say that struck me as well, because when we talk about republic, we're normally thinking of a single country, aren't we? A single geographical unit. So, and if a socialist republic is a world society, I'm not sure the advantage of calling it a republic.
Okay, so notice here. Social republic, not socialist republic. So this is kind of the form, a form through which you can achieve a world socialist revolution. Then once you've got that, yeah, you probably wouldn't call the regional central organization republics. Yeah, whatever you want to call them, really.
Mike, I'll come back to you, Sam.
Okay. I suppose it's sort of a similar point to that, really, because you said sort of near the start of the talk, you know, to sort of keep an eye on the language and some of the terminology. If you sort of read it without knowing the sort of the background and the context and things, it could be misleading, such as use of terms like state.
Yeah.
And I suppose the same goes for, you know, republic. Obviously, that has connotations. Yeah. The word government came up a couple of times. That's got connotations, and I was just wondering what your thoughts were on how, you know, mistranslations or people misinterpreting things, you know, over the decades since, has led to any particular misinterpretations of Kautsky in the sense of someone picking up on the term with modern eyes or a modern viewpoint and missing some of the nuances that were around at the time. Yeah, maybe you could sort of explain.
I'm not sure if the main, possibly, maybe like a kind of layperson reading Kautsky, but the kind of academic or highly theoretical criticism of Kautsky. I mean, one of them was kind of like from a Marxist Hegelian kind of thing, and saying that Kautsky didn't absorb Hegel properly like Lenin did, and therefore he was too simplistic. And I mean, I guess shades of meaning and ambiguity is always a problem in, especially translated texts, isn't it? So, I mean, I guess, yeah, it must played some role, but I think maybe the main reason for all, like, the renegade Kautsky stuff coming about, it's not, maybe the motivation is actually political, because a lot of the people writing the histories, they're wanting to venerate the Bolsheviks and say Lenin is the correct line and all this, and so, yeah. I mean, this is a problem with reading, you know, like the state. If you read, you know, ancient Greek texts have the word state in them with English translations, but their concept isn't really the same as what we'd think of, lack of power, independent people and stuff. So it's an important thing you talk about, yeah, but I'm not sure. I think the kind of sidelining of Kautsky, the motivation is more political than that.
Simon, then.
Yeah, it was just something that came up about, there's one of the Kautsky quotes there, our aim is not socialism, it's the emancipation of everyone.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting, actually.
I think it brings up a point that we tend to put off, and that is that socialism is a cost. You know, we're working within capitalist society, and whenever we try to act in a socialist manner, instead of it being sort of like a down the energy gradient, if you like, it's a cost. And most people, and the reason why you don't have mass parties at the moment, is because it's an unacceptable cost compared to, you know, the available benefits to it. And it also determines the kind of people who are in socialist movements, because those are people who tend to have different cost-benefit analyses with regards to with regards to what socialism means, if you saw what I mean. So we have to look at that in terms of our organisation. It's something that we just don't do. We just assume that we sort of like we hand someone a pamphlet and they're going to join the cause of world socialism or whatever it is. So there's that, but there's also the fact that even when you gain sort of control of a crisis situation, you still have that cost until you go through that process of transformation. The notion is that halfway through the actual business of dealing with a capitalist crisis, you find yourself like the Wicked Witch of the West going, "Help, I'm melting!" You know, and then all that is solid melts into air, and you are able to reframe the character and the society around the characters so that now socialism is no longer a cost, because it is no longer socialism. Socialism is only when you are holding the new intention. Yeah. So I think I'll stop there, apart from just to say that I don't think we consider that enough about the cost-benefit analysis to what we seem to think self-evident.
Okay, yeah. I was wondering with the Kautsky passage, whether his motivation from that is more like a kind of like openness. It's like, you know, we think socialism is the way that the proletariat can be free, but maybe something else comes up that actually experience shows is the way to achieve it. Then, you know, let's not get attached to socialism for the sake of it, because what we actually want is emancipation. So it's more like a, you know, radical openness to change your views in the light of experience and evidence. But yeah, that's.
Yeah. Any other questions? Bill, I'll come back.
Well, just to reiterate the point you made, Kautsky is more often known because Lenin and Trotsky both had to write rebuttals of him. But I think the significant part of that should be that they had to write rebuttals. It was important enough that they had to take on his texts. And the thing is that most people don't read the actual things they're responding to. They're responding to the takedowns and the rebuttals. But actually reading Dictation of the Proletariat, or Terrorism and Socialism. Actually, very strong books on, you know, the again, on this idea of freedom and on the idea of the necessity of democracy and the idea, a book about the idea that a small group of people can take power and kill their way to socialism. I think that's I'm very glad that you come along and give us this talk, give a slight opportunity for him to know to look at more reading these things, because they're not fiendishly dense. And some parts quite enjoyable.
A lot of these, either newspaper articles or short pamphlets written for a popular audience. There are some of Kautsky's later work. He wrote a book, like Historical Materialism, a 2-volume thing, which is kind of regurgitating his grand theory on historical materialism and all. I mean, this is a good one to read for his more theoretical, dense work. But yeah, like you said, all the popular, Class Struggle, Road to Power, Dictatorship of the Proletariat, all these, they're very accessible and readable pamphlets. And they're available on Marxist.org or probably pamphlets, wherever. I mean, everyone should go and should read them, really, I have to say.
What, the reader?
Pardon?
Was that the reader?
No. Everyone should read them.
He's just,
no, don't
I
read
thought
the,
it was someone there.
Yeah.
I thought that.
No, don't read the Rada, no.
It's a bit, you know, proper stuff here.
Yeah.
More like brother.
Yeah. Anyone else? Well, since no one else has got their hand up for the moment, can I go back myself to this? Use of terms, use of terminology, in particular use of state, empty of the sort of any particular connotation. I mean, socialists are the first to sort of know that words can have the value that people choose to give to them. We know that. But for me, state is a new one. The fact that you can talk about the state without it having any sort of, political content, if you like, potentially confusing, isn't it? I mean, people do talk about socialist state. We know what they mean by that. It's used all the time. They mean, I don't know, China or the USSR or Cuba or something like that. So that's doubly confusing, isn't it? If state is going to be used not to mean a political regime, but something different.
Well, I mean, so many different words get, the res publica, the state, the polis, or I think it's important to mean that to realise that it can mean.
I mean, it's being used very vastly. I mean, the state of things, is it?
Situation.
But, more confusing than most.
Yeah,
the most ambiguous words.
Maybe read slowly.
Just one point about the state.
Okay,
the use in Viking etc. of the term thing, sort of like the owl thing. It's a word even more generic than state. If you sort of mean it does refer to the public thing. So you can't really avoid that without saying we're not going to have any kind of meeting, we're not going to have any kind of collective, and then you're down to that first level rather than the second level of socialist economy, which is the entirely individual one. There's some Cicero, if you have a garden and a library, you have everything you need.
Okay. Paddy. Brian first, then Paddy. Brian.
Right, yeah. It used to be talked about there were 57 varieties of anarchism,
Absolutely.
There seems to be 57 varieties of Marxism, really. And the original Marxism, as expressed, is often referred to as social democracy, which basically is coming from Engels and Kautsky, really.
Yeah.
But the party has always seen that social democracy as essentially reformist. And over the years has met criticism of it. But you seem to be suggesting, actually, that Kautsky is not a reformist at all.
No, he's not. No. So reformism is...
So he's not a social democrat?
Yes, he is. But the meaning of social democracy shifted. This is one of, and the early socialist party, I think it would have referred to itself as social democratic. But obviously, if we do that now, it's confusing because it thinks, if we said that now, it means like a welfare state capitalism, doesn't it? So I don't think, no, I don't think, so reformism means, okay, gradualism and reformism may be a different, reformism means all you can get is reforms. You can't change the basis of society. Maybe gradualism is, you know, bit by bit, and then without realising you end up with something else. But no, I think it's completely wrong to say Kautsky was a reformist in his writings.
I just wanted to follow up what you were saying, actually, Howard, because it occurred to me at the time, when Kautsky's describing, oh, there's all these different types of states, and you can't, you know, this one here doesn't look like anything like the British Empire one, doesn't look like the one in, you know, Japan or something. And so let's not get hung up about the word. But I think, actually, well, you do need to be precise sometimes. And I think I agree with Howard. It's like talking about a socialist state because a state can be anything you like is just, oh, it's just obscuring and confusing. Actually, all those examples he gave do have something in common that's really obvious. It's a coercive apparatus on behalf of an exploitative elite. All of those are examples of that, and that's what we mean by state. So, you know, I wouldn't go along with counsel on that. I think that's just too
much. Yeah, he kind of said you can't just say state on its own, say, you know, Athenian state or imperial state or, you know, it's just like, just saying the word state is just too vague, basically. But I mean, this is just a comment on how to read Kautsky. This is, yeah, the main, we can use words how we please, so long as we explain.
Richard? Yeah, just very much on that. I mean, I think Marx used the word state in the same ambiguous way sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think this is something sort of exclusive to Kautsky. And I think the word state is really something that I think we need to be aware of, because today the word state, really, we've got used to the idea that the state means what Weber described as the state, which was the public power of coercion. And so we automatically kind of make that assumption. But I don't think that assumption really is found sort of so clearly in the writings of Kautsky or in the writings of Marx, and that the state is really something which, I like the early the quote that you put up early on, where the state, to evolve the state into something which is subordinate to society, it's the decision-making process, but one which is subordinate to society rather than sort of hold society to ransom, in fact, in the way that it does today on behalf of the Japanese class. So, yeah, I think we just need to, I think that's something we really need to be aware of when we're reading texts from this period.
I mean, anachronism is a very big problem when reading, you know, historical texts. I think you have to be part of reading, you know, when 150-year-old texts or whatever is, you have to be aware of the context and how people use terms and what was going on in those times as well. Yeah.
I'm seeing you thinking about that. Just quickly, Darren mentioned that the party could have chosen to call itself Social Democrats. They did actually have a vote on that at the founding conference, and only 5 members voted in favour of the Social Democratic Party.
Wow.
So they could have, but they didn't.
Yeah, I think
that's interesting.
Probably good they didn't. We might be in trouble. Yeah.
Any more questions? Okay, Danny. Yeah,
I think with the state, the public power of coercion, it should be transformed, like into the public power of democratic administration. That's how I see it.
Yeah.
Well, that's probably a good last word. Okay. We've sort of filled with time, really, haven't we? And it's the brain that we need. Thanks very much indeed, Gareth.